You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Much has been written about the possible dangers that hydraulic fracturing can pose to the nation's water supply, but little attention has been paid to the impact the controversial method of natural gas extraction may have on our food supply. In Fracking Our Food Supply, the cover story of the November 28th issue of The Nation, Elizabeth Roit looked at what's already been happening in North Dakota, where the tails have begun to drop off, at least parts of the tails have begun to drop off of cows that graze near fracking waste, and what many people fear could happen in New York if Governor Cuomo lifts the current ban on fracking. Elizabeth Roit is a contributing reporter for the Food and Environment Reporting Network and the author of two books, Bottle Mania and Garbage Land, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show.
Thank you.
So why has so little been written about how fracking may affect farmers and our food supply? Because isn't a lot of it done under farms?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Farmers, as the largest private landholders in this country, are disproportionately approached by oil and gas companies to do this form of extraction. But we're just beginning to hear farmers speaking out. There's a lot of reasons why they're worried and a lot of reasons why they haven't spoken out. No business person wants to impact their business. People don't want to raise scares. They don't want to scare the public. They don't want to warn people away from their food. But they really don't know what's going on. And we're only starting to see a lot of some circumstantial evidence from ranchers in particular.
Well, aren't some farmers required to sign non-disclosure agreements if they accept settlements from oil and gas companies?
Exactly, yeah.
They can't talk about damage done to their business
because
by the fracking operation?
Yeah. So if there have been spills or accidents on their property, they enter litigation with the oil and gas companies, and they end up signing non-disclosure agreements, which forbid them from speaking to the media and to any investigators, scientists who want to look into this.
And they've also, in some cases, received generous amounts of money.
Yeah.
From the people who are doing the fracking.
Right,
on their
you
land.
Settle. Right, so that's the other issue. Some of these farmers have wells on their property. They entered into these agreements, and they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them. So you have a lot of things working against this transparency. They don't want to affect that relationship. They may have settled out of court, and then there's retaliation from their neighbors. The rig might be on their neighbor's property, but they don't want to be speaking ill of an operation. They have to live in these small communities with other people.
Wasn't there a lot of traffic on The Nation's website about this story? Have you received any threats?
You know, I haven't read through all of the comments. They've come in over time, and I don't check it every day. The oil and gas industry itself posted a response. A shortened version of the story ran on NBC.com, and one of their lobbying groups wrote a rebuttal to the piece, and they challenged some of what I said. But they mostly missed the point of the story, I think, and I put my own rebuttal up there. But they talked about the paper that I talked about. A major part of my article in The Nation cites a case study done by a veterinarian and another professor of molecular biology at Cornell, who looked into all these farmers' cases with their dead cattle, their dead sheep, their dead goats. But it wasn't a scientific study. They didn't give these chemicals to some animals and have a control group. So the industry complained that this wasn't a scientific study, that it was a political document.
Based on anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, and that they also complained that the farmers weren't named, which is pretty standard for these types of studies. You don't reveal their identity, and they're also, many of them, not supposed to be speaking out.
But you also want to make it clear that you're not an anti-fracking activist yourself.
No, I'm not. I'm a reporter, and this was a story that interested me, and I went out and collected information from a lot of different people.
You were able to speak with Jackie Schilke, who raises Black Angus cattle on a 160-acre ranch in northwest North Dakota. 32 oil and gas wells have been drilled within 3 miles of her ranch. Why was she willing to speak with you when so many others were not?
Well, that's a great question. She is so angry, and she is so sick, and she's heartbroken by the loss of these cattle. This is her living. She's been raising cattle for 10 years, and she has always steadfastly said no to these energy companies when they wanted to drill on her property. But eventually a rig was put right on her property line, and there were some problems with it. They lost pressure in it. There was a blowout. And then she started to see these animals limping around her property. They lost between 60 and 80 pounds a week. Mothers stopped producing milk for their calves, and then five cows lost parts of their tails. They just dropped off, and no one could explain what was going on. She herself had all kinds of medical problems, and she had not signed a non-disclosure agreement. Her neighbors, who were ranchers, didn't want to talk, and she had to kind of weather their all this ill will from people. But she's just so angry, and she thinks that it needs to come out. It needs to be talked about.
And didn't five of her cows die?
Yes.
So did she bring in a veterinarian to check them out, find out what the cause of death was?
Veterinarians could not tell her what was going on. When she looked at their lungs, she saw that they were congested with pneumonia. One of the bulls she had to shoot. That's a $5,000 animal. This is a huge economic loss for a rancher.
She stopped selling all of her meat, hasn't she?
And
produce on her land as well?
She had only a personal garden for herself. And she, when her water went bad, her creeks stopped freezing in the winter, 40 degrees below zero, and she still had methane bubbling up and crusty deposits all over the place. She started to feel better when she quit drinking from her well, she quit eating from her garden, and she stopped eating her own beef. She moved her cattle upwind of many of these rigs to get them away from the emissions from the rigs and from the dust on the roads. These are all gravel roads. There's thousands of trucks coming to and fro every single day, raising enormous clouds of dust, which also impacts the animals.
So she felt that she had been diagnosed by doctors with suffering neurotoxic damage and constricted airways.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you can't prove that this is directly related to the fracking. Your story includes a photograph of a cow that lost part of its tail since the drilling began. Is that a common indication that there's something wrong?
Well,
do cows often lose parts of their tails?
Cows can lose their tails in accidents and frostbite, but this wasn't the case with any of her cows. I did some research and found that a chemical called 2-butoxyethyl something that I can't remember right now had been linked with rats losing their tails in experiments, but nobody has given cows this chemical to see. But that is a chemical that is commonly used in drilling and fracking operations. So it's a great mystery, and no one has been able to tell her what's going on there.
Well, is it important for a cow to have a complete tail? Can they survive to a ripe old age without one?
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but I saw I saw a cow. The cow in the photograph was grazing and was very skinny, but I think a cow can live without its tail. That's, you know, my inexpert opinion.
Well, you have listed some of the chemicals that environmental testing found in the air and water in Jackie Shilkey's ranch in your article. She arranged for that testing herself, or was that done by the state of North Dakota?
The state, Environmental Agency came in and did some testing, and the Agriculture Department did some water testing and some air testing, but they were not overly concerned. But she continued to feel sick. She was dizzy. She was passing out. She has urine in her blood. She's limping. And so she called in an independent and certified environmental consultant who found levels of all kinds of chemicals in her air and her water. She had her blood tested and found high levels of acetone and arsenic and germanium, in addition to all the other chemicals.
Benzene, methane, chloroform, butane, propane, toluene, xylene. Do we know that they are all used in fracking?
We do know that.
But we really don't know what is used in fracking. Isn't that true? Because the companies that engage in the process refuse to reveal the chemicals they use. They say it's a trade secret.
Well, they reveal many of them. They are not required to. It's voluntary. They reveal the chemicals after they're used, not before, which is important because if you're going to do pre-drilling testing of your air or water, you need to know what to look for. But if they're not telling you what recipe they're using on this particular well, that doesn't do you much good. So they reveal long lists of chemicals. We know there's more than 600 of them, but one out of every five chemicals is a trade secret. So they're using a lot more than we actually do know about.
My guest is Elizabeth Reut, whose article, Fracking Our Food Supply, was a cover story in the Nation November 28th issue. We're talking about the possible impact that fracking can have on our food supply. We have to be really careful. This is all about alleged?
Yes. It's a speculation. It's about circumstantial evidence and a lot of worried farmers. And it's perception also. It's really important to note that a lot of farmers in New York State, particularly where we're not doing horizontal hydrofracking right now, are super concerned about this issue because the public is learning about it, and the public doesn't like to think that its food, which is organically, sustainably grown, is being overshadowed by these drilling rigs and being subjected to the dust and emissions of these operations, even if the farm itself isn't being fracked.
Well, why haven't there been studies? Has there been pushback from the fracking companies?
Well, the studies are extremely expensive. All of this has happened relatively quickly. These fracking companies are moving in. They're spreading through farmland at a very rapid pace right now. We're way behind the curve on the testing. The EPA is looking at water. The CDC has talked about looking at these different pathways, the air, the soil, the water on farms, looking at the impact in plants and animals. But there has been no federal money allocated to do this.
Is that one of the reasons for that, under the direction of Dick Cheney, the oil and natural gas industries were exempted from complying with environmental regulations under the 2005 Energy Bill? Was that part of the discussion during those secret negotiations that made newspaper headlines, but we never really found out who was in attendance?
Those exemptions are why we don't know what they're using and why they don't have to report what these what they're putting out into the environment. But it's a separate issue, I believe, why we're not allocating funds to do medical research, to study the fate and transport of these chemicals through the environment.
Well, have they we've seen in other areas a kind of a war for scientists, with both sides enlisting scientists to prove their case. Has that happened here?
So far, no, because it's so expensive to do these studies. It takes so much time to find out. It's very complicated because these chemicals interact with existing chemicals in the environment. So you need to find out what's getting into the water, how it moves underground or through surface water, how it interacts with chemicals, if it moves into plants, animals, and then if the chemicals are in the plants or animals, what they could possibly do to a human who ate enough of them over time.
The reason I ask is one of the words we discussed, one of the words coined during the last year was fracademics. And that's a word applied to academics who have been enlisted by the oil and natural gas companies to say that there's no real problem.
Yeah. We've seen that studies have come out of certain universities, and they first appear to be independent, and then we realize that some of these researchers have taken money from industry. But they've been looking at air and they've been looking at water, but I don't know of other people who have been looking at the impact on plants and animals that we eat.
On the other hand, one of the studies you cite, which you mentioned earlier, could also be faulted for not having solid scientific sourcing. They didn't – well, you mentioned they didn't name names, which they never do, but some people saw this as just an advocacy study.
They did, and I think that the authors of the study acknowledged that it wasn't a scientific study, and they also said the reason it's not is because there's no funding to do this work, and there's so much secrecy that it can't be done, and then they made a number of suggestions for change so that we can start to do this work and find out what's really going on.
Elizabeth Wright's cover story in the November 28th issue of The Nation was Fracking Our Food Supply. She is a contributing reporter for the Food and Environmental Reporting Network and the author of two books, Bottle Mania and Garbage Land. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Elizabeth Wright. Her article, Fracking Our Food Supply, was the cover story of the November 28th issue of The Nation, and it's gotten a lot of attention. Have veterinarians been questioned about this?
Yeah, the paper that I mentioned in my article, it's called The Impacts of Gas Drilling on Human and Animal Health, was written by a Cornell veterinarian and her husband, who teaches pharmacology in the College of Veterinary Medicine. And they're the ones who did these case studies, 24 different farms in six different states where they had lost hundreds of cattle and goats and sheep and dogs and cats, horses, companion animals. And they also mentioned in passing effects on wildlife.
So they went to Louisiana, they went to Pennsylvania, to other states. Are there any states that have banned fracking? Well, I know Vermont has, but yeah. Then it's been pointed out that there's probably no natural gas
right.
In
that
Vermont.
Was an easy call. I think New Jersey also has banned the trans. I don't know. European countries have. They either have bans or moratoriums, and of course, New York State is in limbo right now.
Although Great Britain now, they're talking about bringing in fracking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Britain needs faces the same problem the United States does, which is it would prefer to be energy independent.
Who wouldn't?
So let's talk about fracking. What is the fracking process, and why can't it be done in a safe way?
I'm not saying it can't be done in a safe way, and we don't. Some people believe that it can be done. What we're talking about is horizontal hydrofracturing, where they send a drill down thousands of feet into in what we're talking about in the Northeast is the Marcellus Shale. When they get into the shale area, they turn the drill 90 degrees and go for another 1,000 or more feet in a couple of different directions. And then they send millions of gallons of water with chemicals and sand, small quantities or small fractions, down at very high pressure into the earth to fracture the shale, which releases natural gas, which is then pulled up through the drill.
And the Marcellus Shale is pretty large. It runs under West Virginia, Pennsylvania, as well as upstate New York, and I guess some other states.
Yeah, it's enormous.
So if you suck it out, you suck this stuff out, in West Virginia, doesn't it pull some of the stuff that Pennsylvania would have had for itself? Can Pennsylvania be robbing New York's natural gas deposits?
I don't know how far the cracks extend when they blast into the rock. That's a good question. But
I'm just hoping that it all could be extracted in another state.
I don't know.
So Governor Cuomo created a panel during the fall to study the health issue effects of fracking. Before he makes his final decision, are they looking at the impact on the food supply as well as the water supply?
I don't believe they are. They're looking at human health impacts.
Do you know if anybody in the governor's office has read your article?
I don't know. If they have, they haven't contacted me.
It is difficult to predict how the governor will decide, but he's under tremendous pressure to improve the economy. Fracking in other states seems to be pushing their economies forward. Mm-hmm. An article by Ed Crooks in Saturday's Financial Times reported that manufacturers had announced $90 billion in investments in the U.S. to take advantage of its cheap natural gas. And the story also said that the shale revolution appears to be driving an industrial renaissance in
the United
States.
Sure, it is an enormous economic opportunity, and it is a great windfall for many of these farmers also. It's very hard to make a living as a farmer, and when a gas company comes in and says, we want to lease your land, and here's $600,000 for your acreage, and everything's going to be fine, you know, it's very tempting. If we had some stronger farm policies in this country to protect farmers, if they could be assured they'd make a living, they might not be so tempted. But and some people will argue that this risk, if there is a risk, is worth it, that there are benefits here, the energy independence, the money, the jobs. You know, North Dakota, where Schilke lives, has the lowest unemployment rate in the country.
And it's largely due to this boom in oil and gas.
Right, and her area is the Bakken Shale. It is, a huge oil and gas area.
So what do we hear from farmers in this area? Are they split? You attended a fundraising event held in support of a group called Chefs for the Marcellus.
Yeah, chefs and farmers. It was interesting because here I was in Brooklyn, you know, the heart of the foodie nation, and everyone's really concerned about where their food comes from. We all go to farmers markets, and we want to know how our food is grown. And it's this population that is intensely concerned, and the farmers who are, you know, supplying all these farm-to-fork restaurants. It almost doesn't matter what happens in New York. If people think that there is that these farms are being impacted by fracking, whether it's right over the border in Pennsylvania or if these small New York towns are sending water out to these communities or handling the waste, people are worried, perhaps irrationally, perhaps rationally. We don't know. They're just worried that the food that they've cared about so much and are spending a lot of money for may be tainted.
Even if the fracking is done under the safest of conditions.
Right, although a lot of these people don't, I think that they really don't believe that it can be done safely. I mean, I believe we need much tighter regulation and we need enforcement also, and that's, people have so many doubts about the industry.
So on the one hand, we are there's the argument for helping industry. On the other hand, farmers or some people involved in the food world say this might actually hurt us. It would hurt our business if people started doubting
definitely.
The quality of the food.
Right. As I say in the story, there are hundreds of that New York State is on a natural resource tear with these organic dairies and these cheesemaking operations and all this pastured beef. And those are the farmers who are doing really well right now. They're niche businesses. They're supplying a city that is demanding this sort of food. They can hardly meet the demand in the city, which is a great, great thing. And then here on the horizon is what they see as something that's going to poison their business just when things are starting to get going.
My guest is Elizabeth Reuter. Her cover story in The Nation on November 28th is Fracking Our Food Supply. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. There are some other possible impacts of fracking on farms?
Sure. There's these quality of the air issues and quality of the water and the soil, but there's also this purely physical space issues with heavy equipment moving in, pipelines going in, access roads that take away acres from farms. And farmers who raise pastured animals need to grow corn or wheat, or they grow forage. And so the fragmentation of their farms is an issue. When there have been spills and waste ponds have overflowed, it's taken acres out of production. And these farmers still have to pay taxes on that land. There's also a big problem.
They pay taxes on land that has been used for roads?
Yeah, that's now unproductive. They can't use it anymore, but it's still part of their property, and so they pay taxes on it. Farmers are also very concerned with ozone, which is coming off of these from all the heavy equipment and the flaring and the venting. And so ozone is a big concern because it reduces crop yield and the value of forage goes down when there are high ozone levels and soil is acidified. So you've got those other impacts to crops.
Now, we saw an oil boom in the Southwest, in Texas all the way through to California in the 50s and 60s, I guess. Did we learn anything from that experience? Because there were an awful lot of cattle on that land.
Right, but the difference between then and now, one of them is that they were not doing the deep and horizontal fracking with all the chemicals. They weren't using as much water. This is another concern I want to talk about. So they didn't have all the chemicals, and they didn't have all the trucks delivering and taking away and all the waste. It was a much simpler operation. But this water issue is really important in the Southwest because it takes a lot of water to do the fracking. And the Southwest is arid, and now we have farmers competing with energy companies for the water. In Colorado, farmers are paying 3 to 20 times as much as the energy companies. I'm sorry, the energy companies are paying much more than the farmers will at water auctions. And I've read about farmers in Wyoming giving up ranching because they can make more money selling their water rights to the energy companies.
Is that a problem in the Marcellus Shale area, or is there plenty of water up there right now?
It's pretty wet around here, but one concern in that area, someone did a study that showed in the areas with the heaviest fracking, dairy production has dropped, and they don't know if it's because cows are producing less milk or if farmers have quit the dairying business because they've got their oil and gas royalties.
It's similar to what we saw at an earlier time when farmers were selling their land to housing developers.
Right, and people keep saying, "Where's our food going to come from?" It's kind of a back burner issue, but you know, you can't grow good food without clean air, clean water, clean soil.
Listeners have been writing in with questions. John asks, can any of the problems that animals are facing be contributed to radioactivity from the radon in the gas?
Yeah. When fracking water comes up from these wells, it can pick up traces of radioactive material that is normally deep in the earth, and traces of radioactive material have been found around well sites in the air and in the soil and in the water. We don't know yet how this is, if it's moving into animals. Veterinarians have told me it can hurt animals for use for meat production or for dairy.
Mm-hmm. Well, has anybody in the food industry tested for some of these chemicals?
That's a really great question. The USDA inspects our meat, but they are mostly concerned with pathogens and with pesticides, and they're not required to look for these residues of these kinds of fracking chemicals. So if an animal looks well in a gross sort of way, it's going to go through that process. They don't do microscopic work on the organs. And when I tried to contact the Department of Agriculture in Pennsylvania to ask about their milk testing, and they did not get back to me. And I've heard from other people that they won't answer questions about looking for these chemicals of concern in milk in Pennsylvania.
Didn't you meet a restaurant owner who had a map on her wall of the locations where fracking was happening so she wouldn't mistakenly order produce or meat from livestock raised too close to a well?
She didn't tell me she wouldn't order. She's concerned. She's watching it closely. This is Heather Carlucci at Print Restaurant in New York. She buys from a lot of regional farmers in Pennsylvania and New York, and she was one of these people at that event who are concerned and keeping a close eye on it. She said there haven't been any problems so far, and she trusts her providers to tell her what's going on their farms. That's part of the contract, I think, with these kinds of restaurants, is know your farmer, know what's going on, and expect that transparency when you ask them.
So when we go to the green market when that season, well, there are still green markets that are open, mm-hmm. we can actually ask the farmers, is there fracking nearby?
Yes, I think you should, and then, but don't leap to conclusions. you could ask, have you tested your produce?
Well, you have to make your own decisions about those.
You do, but the thing is, these farmers, people who grow produce, I ask them again and again, have you tested? They're all really worried. They irrigate when it gets dry. They're in the Delaware watershed. They're upstate. They're in the Susquehanna watershed, and they tell me, we draw water from these streams when it's dry. And I said, have you tested your produce? And the answer has always been no. It is way too expensive.
And our listeners are wondering whether the food and milk on the shelves of our supermarkets are safe. Is there any way of knowing?
I suppose we could spend billions and billions of dollars to look for, 800 different chemicals at minute levels, and then find out, then do long-term studies to see if consuming these vegetables has any impact. It's extremely complicated and time-consuming and expensive, and it hasn't been done yet.
And this is the same sort of thing we've seen with all the things that are possible carcinogens. The problem is that they may have a long-term impact on our bodies. There's no way of knowing whether if we get cancer 20 or 30 years after we've been in contact with these things,
right.
that they were the cause.
Right. There's no, a scientist said to me once, I was researching some other chemical impacts, and he's like, well, there's no dead geese hanging on the fence over here. But, look at my story. There are dead geese. There are dead fish in ponds. There are squirrels with their tails falling off. There are a few number of cows. Let's be clear here. 97 billion cattle go to slaughter in this country each year. And I wrote about, 120 cows that died after contact with fracking fluids or emissions. So it's a trivial number. But the veterinarians who wrote this report think that these animals are sentinels. These are animals that live outdoors. They breathe a lot more air than we do. They're in constant contact with the water and with the soil and forage. And they might be a warning to us.
And another listener wonders, although I think we answered this question, do other countries regulate some of the chemicals involved in fracking?
The European Union does regulate more of them than we do. They also don't do the fracking that we do, and they have a lot more nuclear energy than we do. That's one of the reasons they don't frack the way mm-hmm. we do.
And we're uncomfortable with nuclear energy as an alternative in this country as well.
Yeah.
So are we caught? And another alternative, of course, is to just use petroleum, which mm-hmm. we and coal, which we recognize as being major factors in global the climate change. So, what's the answer? Windmills?
Conservation.
I've heard complaints about windmills as well.
Yeah.
They make a lot of noise and cast big shadows.
I think the first thing is conservation and efficiency. I'm not an energy expert, but I think that everybody knows that is the fastest and the cheapest thing to cut use of these non-renewable resources.
Josh Fox, who made the documentary film Gasland in 2010, was a guest on this show to talk about what he'd learned. And he reported that he'd set fire to water coming out of a faucet in one of the houses he visited. Did you have a chance to see anything that dramatic in the course of your reporting this story?
No, I didn't. And that is dramatic. But a lot of the people who light their faucets on fire now could do that before there was any fracking. There is a lot of methane in these areas, and it has been in these people's wells even before that happened. So I'm not saying that to discount the fear that these people have and Josh's images, but I'm a little bit cautious about ascribing it to horizontal hydrofracking.
And methane is often comes from just cattle farming. In fact, raising any animals.
Sure, that's in the atmosphere, but this is methane that was coming up out of the ground in their water.
Is there a different kind of methane, or is methane methane?
There's thermogenic methane from deep down and biogenic, which is closer up, and then it's CH4. I'm not a chemist. Mm-hmm. Ask me something else, Leonard.
Well, I guess the real question here is, are we between a rock and a hard place? Because it seems to me every alternative has its upside and its downside. And here we have to decide whether this is just going to be too dangerous for us in the future. What is your feeling? I realize that you are not an anti-fracking activist, but if you knew that some food had been produced in an area where the fracking was common, mm-hmm. would you be reluctant to eat it?
If I had a choice between a hamburger that grew in the shadow of a fracking rig and one that didn't, I'd go for the one that didn't, as would most people, I think. I just think we need to find out. That's what I hope my article does, is spur, raise awareness. And I think that the federal government has to allocate the funds to do these studies. This gas is underground. It's going to be there for a long time. Let's just pull back, do the studies, and get some answers. If it turns out that these chemicals aren't affecting the food supply, how are we going to regulate this industry? There have been some changes recently in different states. It's mostly states that regulate fracking, and they are tightening emissions and water quality. It's all improving. But we also need enforcement of these new rules, and,
one of our listeners, Amy in Manhattan, asks, one of the most active anti-fracking groups is called Food and Water Watch. Did you have any contact with them?
Yes, and I quoted someone from Food and Water Watch who talked to me about his interactions with the USDA. He went to them and was trying to educate them about the different chemicals used in fracking and how they might move through the environment into food animals. And he said that they were almost completely unaware of the issue, and he said it was not on their radar at all, that they had never thought about inspectors having to look for residues of these chemicals in animals that go through slaughterhouses.
We got a listener from Manhattan left this comment on our show page, and I'm reading it exactly as it was written because it has some loaded words in it. Pennsylvania is a Wild West scenario vis-a-vis fracking since moment one. Because of their oil drilling heritage and greedy, lunk-headed electeds, this was ushered in without a thought toward the future, only immediate profit. Those who've taken lucrative leases for the land will simply abandon it. Do you think that's true, that we're going to wind up seeing a lot of abandoned land?
I think some people, yeah. I've heard of farmers who are looking to move. It's not easy to move with a herd of goats or a herd of cattle. Some are just, retiring, giving up the farm. In North Dakota, ranchers are trying to leave.
Elizabeth Wright's article, Fracking Our Food Supply, was a cover story for the November 28th issue of The Nation. Thank you so much for being on our show today to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.